Hi, I'm Scott Price. I am the Policy Director for the Alliance for a Progressive Virginia. Welcome to APV On the Air, which is the podcast of the Alliance for Progressive Virginia. So, it is September 21st, and it has been a couple of weeks since we did a podcast because we got, like, super busy. A lot of stuff happened. Some neo-Confederates came to town. Some of us had to earn a living. A couple of things happened, and we took our time getting around to doing this one, but we're glad to be back with you. A couple things. We had a salon in September, and in the lead-up to that, I did some work with my friend Chris Saladino. We talked about sort of history of the right wing in the U.S., and that was like going to be a two-part podcast, and we posted the first part, and I'm going to get around to posting the second part in the near future. But I'd also, because we thought it was really important in light of Charlottesville and in light of the CSA2 people coming to town this last weekend, we wanted to concentrate on that. And in the lead up to CSA2, our September salon featured yours truly talking about radical right-wing politics and neo-Nazis and neo-Confederates and so on and so forth. And we recorded that, and I was going to just edit that a little bit and throw it up on the podcast, which would be an easy slam dunk for me. I will say that the recording wasn't that good, and also my presentation was okay, but it also was really rambling and would have needed a lot of work. So that's not going to go up. I am going to direct you towards our blog, which you can find at our website, apvonline.org. And in the near future, I will be posting an article that I'm working on now that hopefully will condense my thoughts on history of the American right wing and where we are today and the psychology of the hard right and its connection to this administration. And hopefully I will have that out in fairly short order. Part of the problem is I'm still working it out in my own head. There are a lot of connections. Some of them are very clear and some of them are more tenuous. And so I apologize if this is coming out piecemeal, but hopefully I can get that out on the blog fairly soon, and I'll be able to leave that topic alone for a while. It is a topic that fascinates and disturbs me, and so I tend to come back to it. These people are just miserable, awful messes, and the idea that they now have so much access to the levers of power in this country is both terrifying and infuriating. So I am brought back to it regularly, but I will be moving on. Today's podcast, it's a grab bag of stuff. We're going to talk a little about the healthcare bill, the Graham-Cassidy bill, which is making its way through the Senate now and which you should know about and you should be calling and you should be out in the street, because it will repeal the Affordable Care Act and it will wreck Medicaid and it will decimate our health system. It is a venial and vicious bill, and I will tell you that they are passing it not because they think it's a good bill. Most of them have no idea what's in the bill. They're doing it because they have to have something. The Republican Congress, 115th Congress, and the Trump administration have been abject failures when it comes to passing actual legislation. So they've got to repeal Obamacare so that they can go back to their rabid, ignorant base and tell them they got a win. Trump likes to win because he's a winner. I'm a winner. That's what I do. That's my Trump impersonation. I'm hopefully I won't have to do it forever, but I'm doing it now. So we'll be talking about healthcare. We'll be talking about the multiple Category 5 hurricanes that have been pelting the Caribbean and the United States this last summer. And we'll be talking about FEMA, and we'll be talking about climate change, and we'll talk about some other stuff as well. In the meantime, before we take our first break, I want to do the APV calendar. So, and we're really excited about this. As you know, we do every month, we do on the second Monday of every month at a restaurant here in Richmond, Helen's Restaurant, at 2527 Main Street, and it's a place you should go even when you don't come to see us. You should go there and enjoy their incredible food and wonderful service. They're great people. But we do our monthly salon there. We have a guest speaker, and we have a really good guest speaker which is a step up from me last month, to say the least. It is going to be on the third Monday in October, not the second, so please mark that down, and we'll be pushing that point. I don't want you coming on the wrong day. On October 16th, we will be having His Honor, the Mayor of Richmond, LeVar Stoney, will be visiting us, and we'll be able to talk about all sorts of stuff, the Richmond Education Compact, the water rates, the monuments, you name it. The mayor will be fielding questions on all of that sort of stuff. So we are very excited about that. That is October the 16th, the third Monday in October, and I will try to have something a step above the pizza we've been serving recently. We'll try to have the buffet a little bit more upscale for His Honor. We'd love to see you. Please come out. Check our webpage for more information. We're also on the Facebook and on the Twitter. That is October the 16th. On November 12th, which is a Sunday night, we'll be holding a fundraiser for our sister organization, Together Virginia. That's at the Camel on Broad Street. And I will have more information for you as we get closer. That is a TBA, TBD kind of thing. We're still putting the bands together. I will say we're very proud of the fact that we've been able to get really good local musicians to come in and play. A lot of, you know, people who believe in the progressive work that we do, and we're very proud of that. So I don't know who's playing yet, but it will be really good, and I'm hoping you will come there because it is a good cause and we can use the money. Well, they can use the money. In December. So, okay, backtrack a little bit. This month, a couple of weeks ago, APV, who is a part of the Virginia Civic Engagement Table, we were part of a summit that was going to be held in early September, Economic Justice Summit. And that was, I think, the 9th, but it doesn't matter because we ended up postponing it because there were a whole bunch of things going on that we did not, there are a lot of other organizations doing a lot of other things that we didn't want to step on them or have them overshadow us. So we decided we would push the date back a little bit. And we have settled on a date, December 16th. We are working on the details, but we will have our Economic Justice Summit, and that will be on the 16th of December, which is a Saturday. And we will be talking about issues like the student loan crisis, wage theft, we'll be talking about affordable housing, organized labor, things like that. If you can come out for that, I think it'll be interesting and educational. And we'll have, again, in both those cases, we'll have more information as we get closer. But I just wanted you to mark that date, December 16th, for the Virginia Civic Engagement Table Economic Justice Summit. Okay, so we are going to take a little break. And when we come back, we will talk about things that are going on around the country and here in Virginia on APV On the Air. Podcast of the Alliance for a Progressive Virginia. So, at this point, you know, we're 9 months into this awful, awful administration. And living in Trump world, we're almost a year in which we're living in Trump world. I mean, it's just, you know, miserable. There is a sense, you know, of this sort of planned crisis where at any given moment, all the time, there are crises. Things are going wrong, they're doing terrible, stupid, horrible things, and you don't know which way to look. There is a real sense that they're trying to distract us. Certainly the president's Twitter feed and his and sort of stupid, ignorant things that he thumbs out when he's, I don't know what he's doing, but that it's a distraction for the more intentional stuff. I mean, Trump is an incompetent in a lot of ways, but he has set in motion some really, really awful stuff, whether it's the Department of Education under Betsy DeVos or Tom Price or just you name it. You name it with this administration, and it is devastating and terrible. But I thought we would at least take a few moments to look at some of the things that are going wrong right now, some of the crises that probably require our attention, and at least comment on them as best we can. First thing I want to talk about is healthcare. Now, you're probably aware that over these first 8 months, the Republican Party has been remarkably inept at carrying out any of the agenda that, legislative agenda at least, that Mr. Trump had bragged about going in. This is a president who controls the executive branch. He has a majority in Congress, and he controls, or at least conservatives now control, the Supreme Court of the United States after the Supreme Court heist that occurred over the last year. Just makes me mad just thinking about it. And yet they've been able to get very, very little done. And they are desperate. September 30th is a deadline. After September 30th, with the budget agreement they've got and with the budget process as it is, they're not in a position to pass the health care bill, to pass any kind of health care bill that does not require a 60-vote majority to override the filibuster in the Senate. And they don't have the votes. They didn't have the votes the last time they put Obamacare repeal up there. And it's arguable they still don't, but we don't know, because there's a new bill out which they ran up here really quick right at the end, and they're going to try and push through, and there is talk that they possibly could do it. It is the Graham-Cassidy bill, and it is a bill that would repeal the Affordable Care Act, and in doing so, it would basically, it's not just that it would wreck Obamacare, ACA, it would destroy Medicaid, it would introduce a massive level of uncertainty into the insurance market. It's absolutely remarkable. And the funny thing about it is the reason it has a good chance of passing is because it is more radical than the bills that they've had before. Let's see. I mean, this is from an article on Vox. I'm quoting here. The bill offered by Republican Senators Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy takes money from states that did a good job getting residents covered under Obamacare and gives it to states that did not. It eliminates an expansion of the Medicaid program that covers millions of Americans in favor of block grants. States aren't required to use the money to get people covered or to help subsidize low and middle class income earners, as Obamacare does now. Plus, the bill includes other drastic changes that appeared in some previous bills. Insurers in the private marketplace would be allowed to discriminate against people with pre-existing conditions, for example, and it would eliminate the individual mandate as other bills would have. But this time, there is no replacement. Most analysts agree that this would impose chaos on the individual market. Taken together, these components add up to a sweeping proposal sure to upend the American healthcare system. Because the Senate hasn't seen an independent analysis yet from the Congressional Budget Office, I can't even say for sure how sweeping, and neither can any of the Republicans who have come out in support of it. Their hatred of Obamacare is well known, and it's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, at one level, they think it's socialism or the creeping elements that it will lead to socialism and so on and so forth. But so much of it, too, is about their hatred of the 44th president, of Barack Obama, and their desire to demolish every part of his legacy. So here's the thing, and we've talked about this before, and I'm sure people and lots of people have talked about it. Obamacare was not perfect. It was... It was the quintessential congressional sausage-making bill. It also, like a lot of big congressional bills, it had a lot of moving parts. And normally when you approve a bill like this, and you find out the next year, you go, oh, that was a bad idea. We need to fix this, or we need to tinker with this a little bit. You can do it. But remember, the Republicans have allowed absolutely no changes to Obamacare as it was passed back in 2010. And not only that, of course, they've assaulted it through the court system and made it weaker and more problematic. So yeah, you say I want a single payer. And here at APV, we want single payer too. But in the meantime, this bill is going to throw, at the, as I understand it, a minimum of 18 million people off of their health care. And that could be much higher. We don't know because no one knows. Because the GOP is trying to force this bill through in the waning days of September in an effort to get Donald Trump a win so that he can, have one of his rallies and talk about how he did what he said he was going to do. And it's just abysmal. This is something that you've got to understand about the modern Republican Party. It's not interested in governing. It gave up on governing. I'm not exactly sure when. Maybe sometime in the Bush administration, the second Bush administration. But it's not serious about government. It's serious about, it doesn't believe government can work. And so it doesn't take government seriously. It sees it as a cash cow for industry. It sees it as a cash cow for the defense business. It sees it as a way to promulgate, to spread money around to its friends. But it doesn't take the actual work of government seriously, or the idea that government can do things to make people's lives better. And that's how they can put a bill like this out there with a straight face. And why people, we'll see. But apparently John McCain is hemming and hawing again. And all you people who told me about what a great hero John McCain is because he, grandstanded his way into the Senate at the last minute and voted no on the last repeal bill, you better hope he grandstands into the Senate and votes no again, because John McCain's a Republican. He didn't left that party. John McCain is a prima donna, and he's neither a maverick nor is he particularly politically courageous. And I suspect that there's a good chance he will find his way to voting for this bill. So if he doesn't, I will say thank you, John McCain, for doing the right thing, but I will not spend a lot of time devoted to singing his praises, since he's part of the reason we have this problem. So that was fairly backhanded way of praising him. So here's the deal. There are a couple of Republicans. The obvious ones are Murkowski in Alaska and Collins in Maine. If you happen to live in either of their states, by the way, the total population of those two states is, I think, less than the population of New York or something like that. Those senators will be an important part of stopping this bill. You say, well, if you live in those states, you should call them. We're telling people from around the country to call them, because, here in Virginia, Warner and Kane are going to vote against the bill, and that's good. And you should call them and say, thank you for saying you're going to vote against this bill. But I think it's perfectly reasonable to call those guys and tie up their phones as well, because their vote will affect your health care. And, normally we would tell you don't waste your time on that, but I'm going to tell you to do it. You can reach the congressional switchboard at area code 202-226-2602. Tell them you oppose Cassidy Graham. Tell them that you are watching what they do. And if you want to talk to, if you want to call Collins or Murkowski, Collins is area code 202-224-2523. And if you want to call Murkowski, it is area code 202-224-6665. And if you want to call John McCain and tell him to do the right thing, that's area code 202-224-2235. There you go. So, gosh, It's such a mess. It is such an absolute mess. So Bernie Sanders has put his Medicare for All bill in, and it's great. I mean, it's not going to pass, not in this Congress. And if you want to get after your senator to support it here in Virginia, neither Warner or Kane are supporting the bill, and you should call them and you should tell them that while you appreciate them not voting for Graham Cassidy, that they need to get on board. They need to get on board with Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. One of the things I like about Sanders' bill is that he does it over a series of years. He does it in installments. He brings in the older and younger people and slowly works his way to the middle until everybody's covered. And he does this incrementally, and I think that's really good. People have criticized it and said that he hasn't got a vehicle for paying for it yet. I think there are tons of ways to pay for it. I don't think paying for it is that difficult. The obvious ways that you could think of that would probably not do you or I much trouble would be to tax the sort of Wall Street deals in which stocks and bonds are sold and bought back and forth by computer programs. If you taxed each one of those transactions, a transaction fee, even if you tax it just a small amount, you could raise a large amount of money. That's a great idea. They hate it. They're fighting it terribly because they don't want to give you anything because they're bastards. You could cut the defense budget. The Senate voted 89-8 to pour billions and billions of dollars into the defense budget, more money than Trump even asked for, and Trump is an idiot and doesn't know what he's doing, and they gave him more money to play with, this incompetent who threatens global nuclear war constantly. So, you know, we could cut the defense budget a little bit, like a lot maybe. We would easily pay for Medicare for All. It's what the rest of the industrialized world has been doing. You could raise taxes. You could raise taxes. We are one of the least taxed countries in the industrialized world. You could raise taxes. Let me ask you this. Would you rather pay a little more in your taxes, or would you like to spend your nights laying in bed thinking, what am I going to do if I'm sick? What am I going to do if I'm sick? What am I going to do if my kid gets sick? What am I going to do if my spouse gets sick? Because they're very quickly, we'll run through all the money. That does not happen in most of the industrialized first world. People in France, people in England, they may complain here and there about their health care, this and that, whatever. But they don't go, I guess I'll go bankrupt if I end up with cancer. Not only will I have cancer, but I'll have to declare bankruptcy because it will ruin me, and all my money will in a very short time be transferred in the hands of a healthcare system that is deeply, deeply flawed. So yeah, we need Medicare for All. It's not going to happen with this Congress. You guys have to get off your asses in 2018. Got to get off your asses. So, Graham Cassidy, they could repeal Obamacare by the beginning of the week after next. Keep that in mind. Please, please contact your legislators, in particular your senators, and tell them that you are watching what they do. I'm going to take another little break, and when we come back, we will talk about the hurricanes. All of the hurricanes. You're listening to APV On the Air, a service of the Alliance for a Progressive Virginia. We'll be right back. Welcome back to APV On the Air. I'm Scott Price. And we were talking about healthcare, and what's interesting, of course, is all these things are tied right together. It's about money. It's always about money. And this next thing is about human lives, and it's about the environment and about climate change, but it's about money too. Money, money, money. So this has been a really active hurricane season. One of the things that global warming predicts is that you will have more and stronger hurricanes. Now, there are cycles within cycles, and we've had strong hurricanes in the past, but we haven't had as many that have made landfall recently. And so our friends on the right, you know, immediately smirk every time there isn't a natural disaster that, oh, you know, there's no such thing as global climate change. Well, let's be clear, global climate change is real, and its effects are being felt. Earlier this summer, Hurricane Harvey in the Gulf demolished the area around Houston and a good bit of southeast Texas. It was unprecedented. The language that they use, 500-year storm, 1,000-year storm, let me remind you, that's the language they used the last time that they had a storm like that, and it wasn't 1,000 years ago. That language is trotted out all the time because every storm is worse. It's the same thing when they talk about how hot each year is. They go, well, this is the hottest year on record. When was the last hottest year on record? That was like 2 years ago. I mean, we break the records constantly. We break them all the time. The storm was enormous. If you saw the maps, Texas is pretty big. When it made landfall, the eye of the storm is going over, you know, Galveston Bay, and the top end of the storm is in Dallas. You know, I mean, the storm was enormous. Someone said that it dumped, I've read that it dumped something like the equivalent of the Chesapeake Bay. You took all the water in the Chesapeake Bay and dumped it on Texas in the course of a couple of days. That's what happened. Texas is an unregulated state. It's a libertarian dream. And so they don't have any, Houston has literally no zoning laws. So you have chemical plants next to residential areas. You have big petro installations and plastics and all this in the middle of this natural disaster. It's been a couple of weeks now. We simply do not know how bad it is yet. They're still assessing. And of course, they're under no obligation to say anything. So when people start turning up, and people are already turning up in Houston with lesions on their bodies from being in water that's contaminated with toxic chemicals, which are going into the soil as the water recedes. You know, people are going to get sick. People's kids are going to get sick. And it's, you know, and of course we have a government in Texas and we have a federal government that does not give a damn. I mean, I'm sorry, but they don't. Not in any way that matters. Do they care about the plastics industry or the petrochemical industry? Sure, they're going to get all the subsidies in the world. But as far as the poor people who have been displaced, you know, this is Naomi Klein had a book. I think it's called, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, for a decade or more, and you know, the way in which these sorts of disaster, I think it's disaster politics or disaster economics, I can't remember, or disaster capitalism, I think it's called. You know, when she talks about how this is now its own industry, the way in which people profit off of this crap, the way, for instance, after Katrina, the libertarian people like Betsy DeVos, our education secretary, came in and privatized the New Orleans public schools. You know, they did that because the New Orleans public school system was demolished by Katrina. And it wasn't a great public school system. It had serious problems. You know what? It still has serious problems. But now, it's a for-profit enterprise, and industries are making money off of it. And that's something, by the way, we have to watch out here in Richmond. And you know, this is what happened. You know, Houston is going to be a mess for years and years and years. The idea that, you know, there's nothing that stops you, for instance, in Houston from building on a floodplain because there are no zoning laws. And because Trump let the federal flood insurance legislation, he let that stuff lapse, that, you know, what happened in Harvey is not going to, you know, those people, they had to get their I think their, they had to file, if they had flood insurance, most of them didn't. If they had it, they had to file by the 1st of September. So literally while their houses are underwater, they've got to be running around filing paperwork because, you know, that's how the Trump administration works. I'll say that from what I understand, FEMA has done a pretty darn good job. But remember, the Obama administration put a lot of work into FEMA. Trump's initial budget, the budget that they're still working from, was going to cut FEMA by, I don't know, I don't have the number in front of me. They were going to cut funding for FEMA. Now what they're basically doing is they're funding it piecemeal. They do a little at a time. Want to mention that there's been a lot of stories going around about problems with the Red Cross. I know people who work for the Red Cross who are wonderful folks, and the Red Cross does a lot of good things. But I'm going to say there are clearly some issues about what the Red Cross did in Haiti a couple years ago, and the way in which, like some other organizations, Red Cross can be somewhat top-heavy in where the money that it raises goes. So that was interesting. I still think you should give money to the Red Cross. I think you should donate blood to the Red Cross. The idea that small autonomous groups are all going to band together and do the things that these large NGOs do in these disaster areas, you know, and all the Cajun Navy stuff, all well and good, but that's not a replacement for what well-run NGOs can do in these situations. It really, really isn't. So keep that in mind. We've had two Cat 5 hurricanes. Irma blew through the Caribbean, in many cases the worst storm on record. It did quite a lot of damage to Puerto Rico, to Cuba. Cuba apparently took the brunt, and when the storm did move north, and I mean, it did enormous amount of damage in Florida, but apparently Cuba took some of the edge off of it. Florida is another state run by kleptocrats. Governor Rick Scott, who has profited in the past from legislation he's passed, which sets him up as a perfectly reasonable Trump-era Republican. Although he came long before Trump. Florida took a beating. I don't know where the storm right now, Maria, which is demolishing Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico had already taken a beating from Irma. It's now taking a beating from Maria. That was going on yesterday. So as of today, the headlines tell me that Puerto Rico has lost 100% of its electrical power. There is no electricity in Puerto Rico. That's 3.5 million American citizens without power, many of whom will not have their power restored for weeks, if not longer. That should be the most remarkable thing that we should be dealing with as a country. We're not, because people in Puerto Rico are not the same as people in other parts of the country, as far as this government is concerned. They make that clear all the time. Another hurricane, Jose, that stayed out to sea and did not come ashore, but that was an enormous hurricane. You know, I'm not a meteorologist. I'm not an expert on climate or weather. But the people who are say that this is the product of global warming. This is the product of global climate change. These sorts of things are part of our present and will get worse in our future. And the cleanup and the money that it is going to cost is extraordinary. And let's be clear, this won't go on the budget. You know, this won't go on the federal budget. They're going to be cutting taxes for millionaires in the near future. That's the thing that the Republicans always really wanted to do. They'd like to repeal Obamacare as a thumb in the eye of Barack Obama, and also as a bonus to insurance companies and so on and so forth. But the real thing they want to do, and by the way, most of what their idea of repealing Obamacare was about, the replacement was about cutting taxes for people. And that's the same thing. I mean, they're going to be running this tax cut through that'll blow the deficit up, at which point they'll explain that we can't afford to have any kind of social services, that we had to privatize all of that, and things like we won't be able to pay for disasters and so on and so forth that happen again and again. This is all happening out west. They're having unprecedented forest fires. Part of that has to do with unrestrained growth and people building houses in places they shouldn't build, but it also has to do with climate change and the fact that it is getting drier and drier, and these forests are tinderboxes. It's absolutely devastating. And that's not even to mention, I mean, the earthquakes in Mexico. President, I think he's eventually said something about that, but he's probably too busy tweeting about his about the Emmy Awards, which I'm sure he spent, you know, Sunday night watching. You look, at the one hand, natural disasters happen, right? Of course they do. And on the other hand, we could do better. We can do better. In Mexico City, right? Mexico City, largest city in the Western Hemisphere. They had, 1985, they had a earthquake about like the one they had this week. And I think, I don't have the number in front of me, 5,000 or 6,000 people died. And Mexico City went out of its way to do what California had been doing, and they started doing drills. They changed how they required housing to be built and things like that, right? That's the kind of stuff that government does. And this was a terrible earthquake. There's no two ways about it. But 6,000 people are not going to be dead. The numbers are going to be different because the people of Mexico made a decision to use the power of government to save lives, to plan ahead. We're not doing that in the United States, not with this administration. We're not doing anything like that. It's absolutely pathetic. All right, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back, and I will talk about North Korea and about the president's speech at the UN. Ugh. APV on the air. And you are listening to the podcast of the Alliance for a Progressive Virginia. And tonight, or today, or this morning, depending on when you're listening, we are doing a little grab bag of current events, spending our time moaning and groaning about the many things going on around this country, around the world. Speaking of around the world, so there is a country called North Korea, and it is a weird throwback cult of personality, family dynasty, pseudo-communist, massively armed, massively paranoid nation on the Korean Peninsula. The same family has run it since the end of the Second World War. It is extremely belligerent. It exists as the country is a prison camp. Its population is subjected to enormous amounts of propaganda. It's kept from any kind of connection with the outside world. It's a miserable, miserable place run by awful, awful people. That's the truth. I mean, where we're about to go next, you know, it needs to be understood within that context. Korea is an awful place. And ever since World War II, people have been trying to deal with it. The Chinese have to deal with it. The Japanese have to deal with it. The South Koreans have to deal with it. It's like having someone in your neighborhood. It's like having a house, a neighbor who your rest of your neighbors are. Some of them are good neighbors, some of them are bad neighbors. And then you've got a neighbor who's a sociopath, who, you know, waves guns around, who threatens to kill you, who extraordinarily paranoid about you coming into their yard, or about you, the perception that you might come into their yard. They are dangerous, and you don't know what to do about them. And that's the case with North Korea now for decades and decades and decades. And this is a Korea that has for a long time wanted nuclear weapons, not only because they, you know, because they just want them, because that's a prestige thing, but also, frankly, because after Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi, it is understood that the United States attempts to overthrow the governments of people it doesn't like, and that it is a mistake to not have weapons like that. They are a deterrent against American aggression. They may be awful people, but they're not stupid, frankly. So, during the Bush and the Bush 2 and Obama administration, there were fits and starts trying to get the North Koreans to at least to slow their nuclear research, to their nuclear development, and they were somewhat successful, somewhat unsuccessful. I blame at least some of that on Bush 2, who they sort of walked away from negotiations. Obama didn't get much done with the North Koreans either. And then we have Trump. So North Korea has had nuclear weapons for a while, or we're pretty sure they do. And I think that's established now that they have nuclear weapons. These are probably not really big bombs, but you know what? A small nuclear weapon is a small nuclear weapon. North Korea, I should also point out, has a massive military. It has one of the largest armies in the world. It is poised on the border. It exists in a state of war with the United States and with South Korea. The Korean War ended more than 60 years ago, and there was no peace treaty. So technically, there's still a war in the Korean Peninsula. There are something like, 20,000-30,000 American troops stationed in South Korea, all of whom are, under threat from a nuclear North Korea, but who are also just under threat from a war, a North Korean attack on South Korea. So that's existed for a while. And over the last couple years, the North Koreans have also been developing missile technology. Because having a nuclear weapon is one thing, being able to project your nuclear arsenal into other places is the next step if you want to be a nuclear power. That means, South Korea, that means Japan, but ultimately the gold ring for them is being able to hit the United States. Their missile technology has been getting better. It's still very, very problematic. And there are real questions. Apparently, I'm not an expert on this, but apparently it is quite difficult to... It's one thing to have a nuclear weapon and another thing to have a missile. Getting the nuclear weapon on the missile, having it deploy properly, having it, go up in the air, come back down, land where you want it to land, is very, very difficult. And we don't know necessarily that the North Koreans have that skill. They have been firing weapons better and further, but they still have weapons that blow up on the launch pad, or missiles that blow up on the launch pad and so on. And we don't really have a reason to believe that they could launch weapons the way they say they can. But they are genuinely dangerous, and they want to have that technology. They want very much to have that technology. They recently said that they have developed a hydrogen bomb, a thermonuclear weapon. Before that, they were using fission weapons, the kind of weapons that we used at the end of the Second World War on Japan. Those are smaller. A thermonuclear weapon, a hydrogen bomb, is bigger and does more devastation, and that would be a really bad thing. And their stated goal is to be able to reach the continental United States with thermonuclear weapons. So, are they dangerous? Yes. Are they insane? Probably not. Frankly, it is a given that the use by North Korea of a nuclear weapon would be the prelude to massive destruction. The United States would retaliate massively. There would be no North Korea. The people who run North Korea do not want to die in a fireball. They really, really don't. They use their antagonism with the United States as a way to control their own people. They love the idea, which President Trump has bought into, that they are equals to the United States, who are, you know, locked in a struggle against the United States, which is just nonsense. The North Korea has no economy to speak of. It is a client state of China. China has to help it all the time. North Korea can't feed itself. North Korea exports pretty much nothing to speak of. They're not competent to be on the world stage as anything other than the twitching geek that they are. But they are well armed. And for a long time, American governments have tried to figure out what to do about them. In ways to try to maybe, can they be integrated into the larger community? Can the Chinese help? Can the Japanese help? Can the South Koreans help? You know, there was a sunshine policy in South Korea. The South Koreans thought for a while that maybe they were moving towards some kind of de-escalation and approachment with North Koreans. That has fizzled out, at least partially because we have an administration that is run by a man baby who is pretty much a mirror image of the little monster that runs North Korea. Donald Trump is exactly what the North Koreans have been asking for years. He is someone who will play the same game of chicken with them that they wanted desperately American governments to play, and that for the most part American governments haven't wanted to play. The North Koreans traditionally use really bellicose language. They talk about, you know, seas of blood and oceans of flame and the ways in which they will destroy and destroy and destroy. And we have a president who's happy to use exactly the same kind of language. He has lowered himself and the United States to their level. And this week, in the midst of all this, saber-rattling isn't the right word. Saber-rattling is what people do with sabers. This is what idiots do on the internet. You know, this is sort of troll culture translated to international politics. It is absolutely remarkable. The president called, what did he call Kim Jong-un? Called him Rocket Man on the Twitter, which is his how he communicates with the world, because he's too stupid to use his words and he has to. So he goes to the UN with a speech written apparently by this guy, with Steve Miller, who's a radical nationalist, you know, loves the idea of anyway, I'll talk about Miller another time. But he goes up to the UN and he gives a teleprompter speech. But the teleprompter speech he gives is still pure Trump. He uses the Rocket Man line. He's an absolute embarrassment. He's an absolute embarrassment. And he, again, wanders around waving you-know-what around, talking about the way in which the United States will destroy North Korea. He's like some stupid TV villain. Both of them. It's like two TV villains fighting each other. It's just absolutely remarkable that we have to live with this. I don't know. You know, I've been embarrassed by the behavior of my country now for a long time. And sometimes during the Obama administration. Barack Obama was not by any means perfect, and our foreign policy was deeply problematic, and there were other elements to his policies that I had issues with. That's not the embarrassment that I'm feeling now. This is just an embarrassment that the government that represents us is run by an idiot. An absolute idiot. A dangerous idiot with control over the nuclear weapon systems, with the ability to wreck our economy, with the ability to demolish the social safety net that we took a century to build. It's absolutely remarkable. And watching Donald Trump in front of the United Nations, this is a man who... Well, I think at one point during his speech, he made up a country in Africa that doesn't exist. He casually insults our own allies. He called out a bunch of countries for various things that he doesn't like about them, whether it was Venezuela or Iran. Never mentioned Russia. Mr. Trump is just an absolute, absolute embarrassment. And it is shocking. And I do not know what will happen with North Korea. I do not think that Donald Trump would engage in a thermonuclear war with North Korea just out of pique. But I think he's capable of anything. I'm sorry, I think he's capable of anything. I am not surprised by any behavior on his part. It's absolutely remarkable. So, APV on the air. We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to be summing up on that cheerful note, thermonuclear war potential with Korea. APV on the air. Be right back. On the Air, the podcast of the Alliance for a Progressive Virginia. I'm Scott Price. I'm your host. And we have been talking about all sorts of horrible things. Hurricanes, President Trump, the North Korean crisis. What else? There's a lot of other stuff going on. It looks as though the agreement that the Obama administration had worked out with Iran to end its nuclear weapons program. Trump doesn't like it and wants to make his own deal. And so he is going to unilaterally cancel that deal maybe as soon as this week. In St. Louis, a white officer who was accused of killing an unarmed African-American man was acquitted. Predictably, people went into the streets to voice their anger. And the St. Louis police showed up, and while they were arresting protesters, they chanted, "Whose streets? Our streets," which is a taunting of protesters who have been out in the streets and who often use that line. Way to go, St. Louis police. And you wonder why people hate you. Here in Richmond, this last weekend, we talked about this a lot in the lead-up. We talked about this on our webpage and in other places. You know, we had a visitation from an organization called the Confederate States of America II. We, at our last salon, we talked about the fact that we didn't know a lot about this organization. We did not think it was going to be a redo of what happened in August in Charlottesville. But we also had no idea. I mean, honestly, we had no idea whether or not this was going to be a couple of people in a van or whether it was going to be maybe hundreds of neo-Nazis. We simply didn't know. So it's our city, and APV was on the streets of Richmond, Virginia, and we were not alone. I don't know what the actual numbers were, 600, 700 people marching peacefully through the streets of Richmond in opposition to hate and opposition to racism and the kind of right-wing radicalism that we have come to expect in this country from that side. It was a beautiful day. Nobody got hurt. Some people got arrested, and I can't speak to that. I wasn't there, but I think the charges should be dismissed. This was a peaceful gathering. And when I say I think the charges, I say I wasn't there, but I think the charges should be dismissed. Again, I can't speak to it, but the misdemeanor stuff was all about wearing a mask and so on and so forth. It's just nonsense. This is the police behaving badly, in my opinion. So I think we should dismiss any charges. It went about as well as we could have expected and we could have hoped for. But here's the thing. Let's not be lulled into sleep on this. we did not really think it was going to be another, you know, Unite the Right kind of rally, but we didn't know that it wouldn't be. And so when these things happen, you've got to come out. You've got to stand up. I know it's scary. I know people in our organization were genuinely frightened. I was frightened. Even in a relatively peaceful setting, you're worried about people with automobiles, people who have firearms and who are allowed to carry them around the streets of Richmond, which is remarkable. They were searching people for weapons, but if you were carrying an assault rifle on your back, they would let you through. Tells you something about the state of our Commonwealth. So what happened on S16, some folks like to phrase these things, I thought it went really, really well, and I was very proud of everybody who showed up and all the groups that worked to make it safe and to bring attention. Black Lives Matter group came down from New York. It was really nice to see them. There were a lot of groups that were providing medical assistance and legal observation, and everybody did a great job. So what I would say about that is keep your head up, keep your eyes open. That is something, we did really, really well. But I want to jump back for just a second too. I want to say one thing. You're hearing a lot, it costs a lot of money for the Richmond police and the state police to stage this thing, a rally that was not permitted. You know, they blocked off the Lee Monument in Richmond, blocked off the streets leading to it, spent, I think, as much as $1 million on crowd control and policing and first responders and all of this stuff for a rally that was not permitted, that was not allowed to happen. And by doing that, they basically allowed the rally to happen. That made no sense. But here's the thing too, is they patted themselves on the back about how what a great job they did. I don't know what they learned from this, but the counter protesters, us, we were well behaved, we were smart, and we, you know, were not there for a fight. And by the way, the Antifa people who were there gives you an idea of what Antifa is. There were not enough fascists there. They were not aggressive fascists looking for a trouble. So when Antifa showed up, nothing happened because they are not there to cause trouble. They are there to engage with fascists. And we can talk up and down about whether that's a good idea, it's a good strategy or not. But it is important to understand that. They are reactive. They are not aggressive in that regard. So anyway, so September 16th was a good day. And while my feet hurt, and the whole thing was tiring and annoying, I am glad that we were out there with our brothers and sisters. And in that regard, at a time when so much bad is happening, it was really, really nice to be out there with people and not have things go south and not have anything go bad. So we will be back hopefully next week. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I know that this podcast can be depressing. I'd like to say that there's all sorts of great stuff going on. I tried to end it on a good note, but we're going to be here one way or the other. We're not quitting. And there's stuff going on. There's stuff you got to pay attention to. There's an election November 7th in Richmond and in Virginia. Governor, Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, the entire House of Delegates, get out and vote. Learn about the candidates and get out and vote. With that, I will say goodbye. Thank you for listening to APV On the Air, a product of the Alliance for Progressive Virginia with help from our sister organization, Together Virginia. Look for us at our website, apvonline.org. You can donate at that website. We would be happy to take whatever you can donate. We are a small organization. We work on a very limited budget. Anything you can give helps. Our sister organization, Together Virginia, is at togethervirginia.org, and they are a not-for-profit 501c3 organization. Your donation to them would be tax-deductible, so please keep that in mind. And they work on educational issues, on educating people on issues, and we're proud to have them as our sister organization. You can find us on Facebook at Alliance for Progressive Virginia. You can find us on Twitter, Alliance for Progressive Virginia. We'll see you next week, and stay safe, and take care. Thank you so much, APV On the Air.